Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
So, the University of Stellenbosch has conducted a study which we thought was really worth looking into. And this is, you know, just to assess the state of the teachers and how they feel about their profession and some of the difficulties that they experience. On the line with us is senior researcher at Research on Social Economic Policy at Stellenbosch University, Dr. Helene Hofmeyr, who's on the line with us this evening. Dr. Hofmeyr, good evening and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Dr. Hofmeyr, I mean, what was the study in aid of, just so that we get it quite clear from the word go?
Yes, so we at RECEP have been working on a broader project called the Teacher Demographic Dividend Project, which was all about looking at this upcoming wave of teacher retirements and looking at how many teachers are actually going to leave the profession because they'll be retiring. But as we embarked on that study and looked more at the data, we actually saw that there's a lot of teachers who are also leaving the profession before retirement. And after kind of bringing this up with a lot of officials at the district and the provincial level, they also said to us, yeah, it's a huge problem, not just retirements, but teachers coming in and then staying for 5 years and then leaving. So that made us decide, okay, you know, if we want to understand teacher supply in the country, we really need to look at why are teachers leaving the profession prematurely.
I mean, I had a look at the study, and really what came out was, for me, quite astounding. The mental health is a big issue, teachers just not being given support because they themselves are supporting children who come from very difficult circumstances.
Yes, exactly. That was one of the kind of most striking findings for me as well. You know, I think teachers often get such a bad rap because of the poor outcomes in education in South Africa. And of course, you know, they play a role in producing those outcomes. But I think this study just made so clear to me the extremely difficult circumstances that so many learners are facing. You know, I think somebody said the classroom is a microcosm of society, you know, and it just became so clear that children in South Africa are suffering under the social ills that we kind of read about in the news every day. And it became clear that teachers are kind of the frontline workers dealing with these societal issues and the impact that they have on kids. And I think what was disheartening was, as you mentioned, just the impact that that had on teachers' mental health, because they're playing these roles of psychologists and social workers, sometimes even caregivers, but they're not trained for that. You know, they're trained to deliver the curriculum. And so I think it has a great toll on them.
What struck me, Dr. Hofmeyr, is just how much more we need to deal with, or at least even assess, what teachers themselves get trained on. So remedial sort of capabilities, I'm not sure, you know, to what extent they get taught in university, those who are aspiring teachers, and many other things, as you're saying. You know, they're not psychologists, so they're not social workers, but can we pile on that? Can we pile that up for teachers who are in varsity? Is that possible?
Right. I think that also came up. You know, teachers saying, well, one of the questions we explicitly asked them, did your studies prepare you for the world of teaching? And the one teacher said, no, it's night and day. You know, you cannot compare. And I think that is a major gap in how we train teachers. Is it is assumed that they're going to walk into your typical upper middle class suburban school where the kids are well taken care of, you know, there's no neglect, there's no violence in the communities, there's no crime, and the school is resourced, right? And it's just obviously not the case. And I think there's so much space. It's encouraging to me that there are NGOs now that are conducting programs, training programs with teachers, and they're recognizing all of the social difficulties that kids come to school with. And there's, I think there's so much space to say, guys, let's be realistic about what the average school, the average classroom in South Africa looks like. And look at what NGOs are doing. You know, there's instances of trauma-informed teaching. You know, 4 in 10 children in South Africa will experience a traumatic event by their 17th birthday.
Sure.
You know, it is so clear that that is an avenue that we need to take. So yeah, to answer your question, I think there's so much space in teacher training to bring in the South African context, to not assume, you know, we're in Norway and use textbooks that are for the Norwegian context, for example.
But I was also struck that the more affluent schools, teachers were also quite stressed there. Maybe yeah. just give us that kind of context.
Yeah, so it was also very surprising to us, and it was one of the main things we wanted to investigate in the study is, you know, how does teacher stress and job satisfaction differ across these vastly different school contexts? And so we were very surprised to see that the teachers in the better resourced schools reported higher levels of stress. I think it's clear to us that the sources of stress are very different in these two kind of contexts. You know, in the under-resourced schools, there's no materials, there's no printer, there's no stationery. Those things are causing stress. But in your better resourced schools, it was very clear that parents and school governing bodies placed so much pressure on teachers. You know, they said that it was a sense of being kind of under a microscope, because the school needs to be the top performer in the province for the however many years in a row. So it was the sense of, I think, especially parents almost getting over-involved and sometimes even taking to social media to complain about teachers. So just a strong sense that there was so much pressure put on teachers to deliver these excellent results without really understanding what their job entails.
This is obviously a concern. In fact, I think there was a protest today by SATU, yes, where they complain about the fact that they no longer have the assistance of teacher assistants and so on. So the burden has become even more grave. No more resources to add more teachers. So if a teacher is sick, a teacher's just sick, and everybody else has to kind of make do. So all the other difficulties, because obviously there's no money. Just maybe give me a sense of what is possible. And I know that wasn't what you were looking to get there, but did they give you a sense of how they think we could assist them in alleviating some of the pressure?
I think that it's interesting that you bring up the teaching assistants. That was actually mentioned as a very common potential suggestion for improving the situation. I think especially with administrative work, it was a big finding of our report. 70% of teachers said that their number one source of stress is administrative work. And they said, well, you know, the teaching assistants have been super helpful because it turns out they can do a lot of this admin. But in terms of kind of broader suggestions, I think something we can do that is not going to cost a lot of money, in fact, it's going to hopefully be cheaper in the long run, is just to look at what are all the admin tasks that teachers are expected to do. I think it became clear to us that teachers, it wasn't just that there was a lot of admin, you know, the volume, but that the tasks that they were doing were kind of redundant and repetitive. Teachers, for example, filling in these progress reports for every learner, which is a great initiative, you know, let's identify the kids who are struggling. But there was a strong sense among the teachers that we interviewed that nobody was looking at all of these reports that they were submitting. And one of the teachers actually said, well, I don't blame them. We submit so much stuff. There's no way they can look through everything.
I was going to ask you.
In terms of, immediate policy action, I think that to me stands out as the easiest one. It's a major source of stress, and it's something that we can really address without spending too much money.
And I know what it's like now, but was there thought behind that policy position in the first place? Were we trying to, maybe in a way try to improve what we're doing? What was the rationale behind it?
Yeah, I think that kind of policy comes from a strong move towards documenting things that happen in education, right? Documenting what happens in schools. And unfortunately, there's more and more evidence that the documentation process, as it becomes filtered down, it no longer becomes about we should be documenting so that there's, record of the good work that we're doing, but just documenting for itself. And we don't understand why we're submitting these reports, but we're doing it. So I think, a lot of these policies in education, they come from a really good place of let's improve outcomes. But, as things kind of filter down the line, they kind of get watered down to a point where we're just filling in documents and we don't even know why or who looks at them.
And I suppose two things, and I think you touched on that a little bit, in the sense that if the teachers actually got the feedback from all the hours of the documentation, perhaps it would be beneficial. And number two, if we could see the improvements, and sometimes I'm not sure the general public can see what the documentation actually hopes to achieve.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, your first point about, you know, I think it's admin is not nice, right? Nobody enjoys doing admin, and we all have to do admin. But that feeling that it's just kind of going into the void and nobody's looking at it, that was the real source of frustration. So I think if there was actually a response, you know, if a teacher submitted a thing that said, look, I'm sitting with a grade 8 learner who can't read, and within weeks, a subject advisor pitched up at the school and said, where's that learner? That would be a very, very different story. So that's one of the things. And I think there's some very exciting evidence coming out from Kenya in terms of your point about teachers seeing progress. So they have a program there called the Tusome program, where the teachers assess learners on a very regular basis, and then they upload those results kind of onto this big dashboard, and they have quarterly meetings where they share, they get to see the results of the dashboard. And somebody, you know, then somebody says to them, oh, look, your district was in the 20th place and now it's in the 4th place. You know, you're definitely improving. So I think, you know, if you don't couple admin with a kind of sharing the results with teachers and saying, thank you for all the work you're doing, putting in all these marks. Look at this dashboard. Look at what's improving. You know, then it becomes just a very frustrating activity.
And for me, another reason why it would help is just to better manage the very limited resources in this way. If we know that Area X, for whatever reason, has a lot more students who need remedial assistance or psychological assistance, maybe it's an area where there's massive poverty, then there could be, you know, interventions that are targeted in a way, you know, so that we know, okay, there's a crisis looming in this area, so maybe we need to sort of push resources to that particular area in a way. I think it could help if the documentation was actually looked at.
If it was looked at, and I really want to echo what you're saying about the kind of contextual interventions. I think I haven't done research on this, but my feeling really is just it's the kind of blanket policy that we've tried to do in education for the last 30 years, which is, you know, treat every school exactly the same. And there's obviously a lot of historical reason for that. But what's happened is you put in a policy that says everybody has to report on learners in every school, but as you say, you know, that might be more necessary in some contexts than others. And then you create a situation where teachers in places where it's not that necessary feel, why am I doing this? You know, so I think there's definitely space for kind of more targeted, exactly like you said, targeted and context-specific programs.
Dr. Hoppe, I may be asking you a question that you have not done work on, but it feels to me, and it's just a feeling I get, that perhaps there's also a major disconnect between the administrative stuff at district level, the regional staff, an office, and the national office to what's happening on the ground. There's a disconnect there. So there are wonderful policies, wonderful papers being put together, wonderful intentions, I may go as far as that, but a major disconnect between that and what actually happens on the ground in the classroom. Is that the sense you get?
That's my sense as well, and you're right, I haven't, you know, dug into this very deeply, but, you know, from the work that I know of my colleagues who've worked on this, that, you know, that's absolutely the case. And I think the curriculum, the CAPS curriculum is a great example of this. I don't know if you know of the CAPS curriculum or, you know, have looked at it. It is just endless tables, you know, in like font size 4 of everything that a child is supposed to be able to do by this term. And it's so well intentioned, but it's so overwhelming for teachers to even understand what is happening in the CAPS document, but secondly, to get students to that place. You know, one of the things that the teacher said in our survey and in our interviews was, yeah, the district expects us to pass everyone, that everyone should be getting a pass mark, but I'm getting a grade 10 learner who can't read. So how am I supposed to pass them? Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, so in one sense, it's great that we have this very ambitious curriculum. It's like, yes, we want quality education, we want quality outcomes. But on the other hand, who's actually meeting those proficiency levels, and what happens to the learners who aren't? You know, are we just pushing them through the system? And, you know, they, like this one teacher said, they reach grade 10 and they can't read.
One of the things I saw in your report is this, the reluctance for teachers to even think about going to rural schools, let alone going, but the, even the thought of it is just not something they're willing to entertain.
Yeah. So that was also quite a disheartening finding, you know, that 40% of surveyed teachers said nothing would convince me to move to a rural school. And, you know, we put all kinds of incentives there. We put housing subsidy. We set even like a higher salary. Mm. And then the last option was nothing would convince me. And 40% of them said that. You know?
I mean, we laugh, but it's quite serious. Yeah, no, and I think no, it speaks to the working conditions. You know, we know about the pit toilets. We know about all the other infrastructural problems, as well as the, you know, the other resources that are just not there. So I can imagine when they look at their current circumstances, they're thinking there is no way we're going to get by in an environment like that.
Totally. And I think, you know, there's the challenges of a rural school, which are, you know, serious and very specific. But then there's also just living in a rural area. Mm. One of the things that teachers who we interviewed brought up is they said, you know, I don't mind. Like, I actually want to maybe move to a rural area and go help vulnerable rural children. Like, you know, I sometimes feel a calling towards that, but I don't know that I can live there. You know, the community works in a very specific way. I'm going to be seen as an outsider. So, you know, that was kind of encouraging. And, you know, the kind of takeaway for me was maybe if we had some sort of community orientation program for young teachers, because that was also what was encouraging. There were so many young teachers who we spoke to who said, you know, I want to make a difference. And yes, I would love to move to a rural area, you know, if there was something like that in place.
So those class sizes are not going to decrease anytime soon, because we know that we're not hiring teachers. What are, you know, teachers suggesting can be done? Are there any suggestions coming through from the schools themselves, from the teachers? Maybe, I don't know, sharing the day? What are you hearing and what are you thinking could be done?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, at the moment, it's just frustration.
Yeah.
We don't really get a lot of solutions.
Yeah.
And I think what's particularly, it's not just that there's no more hires being made, but it's this freezing of posts.
Yes.
You know, where principal, deputy principal roles just have been vacant for 3 years and a teacher has stepped into that role. So, you know, it's the solution there is stop freezing posts. what else must we do?
Wow. I really appreciate you giving us a time today. I mean, I felt quite depressed having read the report. It must have been disheartening, you know, doing the work yourself. I suppose the teachers themselves are completely frustrated.
Yeah. You know, it was a challenge. There were so many teachers who they would tell you about the kind of very challenging conditions they were working under. And then I'd say, wow, you know, you sound really frustrated. Does this mean you want to leave the profession? And they would say, what? What do you mean? And they would say, no, absolutely not. You know, I, even though it's so challenging, I find this work so meaningful. I feel called to help the marginalized South African child. You know, this is how I'm contributing to nation building. So, you know, for every call that there was where there was a teacher who said, yeah, I'm leaving, I'm out, there was another call with such an inspiring and dedicated teacher.
Did their salaries come up at all?
Did their salaries come up? You know, it was one of those things where they kind of just brushed over it. They said, of course I'd like to earn more, but, you know,
it's not a thing.
It's fine.
I get it.
Given up that fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. Dr. Helene Hofmeyer is a senior researcher at Research on Socioeconomic Policy at Stellenbosch University. Thanks, Doc, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this chat.
Thank you.
Click kaya959.co.za. This is how we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.